Unpolished Little Gems, Episode 10, Facade. Nina is visiting her nan, and there are some shocking family secrets to be revealed. But not quite what she thinks, though. The Friends stars Julie Hoverson as Julie and Naomi Bowman as Nina, and was written and produced by Tracy Haywood.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. What a lovely surprise. Are you here to see me?
Yeah, I am, yeah. I had a day off, so I thought I'd come over and say hi and have a cup of tea.
Oh, how lovely. Come on in.
Thanks.
Have you had your lunch? I can make you a sandwich or cheese on toast.
No, I had something earlier, thanks.
Well, sit down. I'll put the kettle on.
So, I've been into town today to get some bits for Steve's party.
Oh, yes? Do you want me to make anything? I could perhaps...
No, we're all right, thanks. Look, I've been wanting to talk to you about that. So, Steve's got a few friends coming to the party.
Oh, yes.
He's got Martin, who you've met quite a few times, and James, who he works with. And he's got John, who you might not have met before.
Oh, yes, John. No, I've met him. We spoke at your mum's birthday last year, at the Italian in town. It's changed hands recently. It used to be a beefeater, but it changed hands about 2 years ago.
Right.
They changed the layout, and now they've got those big open kitchens.
Yeah. So, as I said, John's going to be there.
Yes, I remember. I did talk to John. He's a veterinarian at what used to be that little private practice run by Dr. Chidrey.
Right.
So I spoke to John about Tilly's weight loss.
Right.
And he said it might be worth changing her brand of biscuits to see if it sparked her appetite.
So, yeah, about John. He's Steve's friend, and he's coming to Steve's party. And Steve, well, he's...
He studied in London, didn't he, John?
I don't know. Maybe. Yes?
It must be expensive studying in London.
Probably. Look, Nan, we've discussed this a lot at home and at this party. Because it's his birthday, Steve would like John not to be at his party as his friend, but as his boyfriend.
Oh, right.
And so we hoped we could talk about it now. And you could ask me any questions about what you don't understand, and we could go through it all. So? We understand this will be confusing for you. Do you have any questions?
No.
Do you understand what I mean, though, when I say that he's not his friend?
Yes, I do.
Now, we understand that you're from a different generation, but things have changed now, Nan.
Yes, of course I know what you mean. There's always been people like that, with the friend. In fact, that's what your granddad was.
Granddad was what?
Gay.
No, that's changed its meaning now, Nan.
Yes, I know. He was the new gay. He wasn't happy. He wasn't happy at all, actually. All those lies. Granddad was gay.
And you knew this?
Yes, of course I knew. He was when I met him. We were friends. He wanted to get into the police, and he had said how it might be a problem, and I thought, that's not fair.
What?
Well, it wasn't fair that it would affect him being in the police. He was very good at it. Being gay had nothing to do with it. It wasn't fair that it would have stopped him.
So you married him, knowing?
Yes, we thought we would figure it out as we went along.
You didn't mind?
No, I suggested it. It sounded quite nice to me. I could move out of my father's house and live my life and carry on with my job. I knew plenty of young women who married men that weren't gay, and they had to stop working. they couldn't do their own thing. I didn't fancy that at all.
So you weren't in love with Grandad?
No, I loved him very much. He was a wonderful companion.
So you've never been in love?
Oh, no. I was in love. I was madly in love.
With Grandad?
No, with Charlie.
Who's Charlie?
Oh, Charlie. I loved him so much. We met when at this little local theatre group I had volunteered at. I was 57 at that time, and he was this quiet music teacher from Yorkshire. He always had his head hanging down like he was apologizing for something. And he had the kindest smile. We bonded over a number of weeks at the rehearsals for Singing in the Rain. Just little things, chatting about old films and old songs and things. And he was a big fan of history, and he wasn't one of those people who say they want to have a chat about something and just talk you over and tell you everything they know. He really did want to hear about what I knew, what I thought about things. But anyway, that was that. But then after opening night, we had a little celebration backstage at the theatre. Someone brought a tape player and some old tapes, and I got chatting with Charlie. It was about Dickens, it was. I can still remember it now. And all of a sudden he asked me if I wanted to dance. Now, I know this must have been a big thing for him to do, given how shy he was. So I was thrilled. We danced and we laughed, and as I listened to the music and I felt his warm body wrapped around me, I thought, this is it. This is what love feels like. At 57, can you imagine it? I felt like a young girl. We finished dancing, and he took my number, and the next day he invited me to an open-air cinema in Chorley Park to see Roman Holiday. I hid my wedding ring that night in my pocket. He'd put together a lovely little picnic. We met at the big gate, and he said, I didn't know if you were vegetarian, so I got a ham sandwich and egg and cress. And I can have whichever one you don't want. And I've got summer fruit salad, Jersey cream, and meringues. I fell in love with him in that moment, I think. I could just picture him dithering in M&S. He was a ditherer, Charlie was. And I found that quality absolutely wonderful in him. I don't know why. We went on 5 magical dates. Then on our 6th date, he took me to see the fireworks. He told me to wrap up warm, which with someone else I would have found patronizing, but with him it was sweet. So I wrapped up warm and I met him with excitement and a heavy heart. Knowing tonight was going to be the night I told him. We sipped hot chocolates and watched the sky light up with 1,000 colors. And I thought, if he accepts this, this could be something we do together every year. And as I watched the light from the last firework fade away, I turned to him and said, Charlie, I've got something to tell you. And he said, oh yes, with a glimmer of hope in his eyes that just broke my heart. And I said, I've got a husband, Charlie.
Nan, this is all unbelievable.
You and your brother probably see me as this old thing, sitting in a chair waiting for you to come round so I can make you tea. But we are so much more than that. Now, your granddad, he never used to eat breakfast. He said he never liked eating that early and always refused it, which was absolutely fine, but I always thought how nice it must be to have breakfast with someone and make a bit of a thing of it on the table. Your granddad always used to do his own thing, and I used to sit in my chair with a bowl of cereals and my book. But it would be nice to get a proper coffee pot, maybe have boiled eggs and soldiers, and, you know, make a thing of it. And when I started to get to know Charlie better, I would imagine doing that with him. Thinking I could stay over at his house a few nights a week and have breakfast together, and he would have been my friend, as you call it. Anyway, on that night at the fireworks, I said, I've got a husband, Charlie, and his face, it just crumbled. I still remember it now, the way it fell, like I had taken all of the air out of him. You've got a what? He asked me, and he was filled with so much panic that it made me panic. I had planned what I would say to him ahead of time, but when I saw what the news had done to his face, I just forgot it all, and it all came out so wrong. I couldn't make it make sense, and he was just getting more and more upset. He was crying, and so was I, but I just couldn't find the words to make him see. And then the fireworks finished, so he started to walk away from me into the crowd. I just let him go. He loved me. The only man who did love me. I loved him too, and I let him go.
And you never saw him again?
No. I thought about it all the time, but I just thought. I couldn't bear to call him and hear it in his voice that he didn't love me anymore. So slowly, and also quite suddenly, 20 years passes you by, and they're just a stranger to you.
Oh, wow. What was his name again?
Charlie Ingham.
Charlie Ingham.
So, yes, if you're asking, I do know what a friend is, actually. And quite frankly,
I've found him.
You've what?
Charlie Ingham. I found him on Facebook. He still lives locally, Nan. Do you want me to send him a message? Nan?
A wealthy Parisian suitor shows Cora Pill that the life of a 19th century courtesan is not all it's cracked up to be. Pill Before Swine stars Francesca Anderson as Cora and Siftine Benema as Deval and was written and produced by Tasman Pinder.
Encounter with a man was at the age of 20. Eliza Emma Crouch was my name at the point, the name which my dearest mother and father had chosen. Life in Jersey was a bore, and my grandmother's injunctions to be wary of the ways of men, most especially nicer men, seemed merely tedious, overbearing constraints on a young woman's freedom. One Friday afternoon, I decided to take a walk without my chaperone, and upon leaving the house was befriended by one Mr. Horace Ignatius. A charming man by all accounts, at least he certainly believed himself to be. He regaled me with amusing stories of a recent visit to Granada, where he'd been to the Alhambra. I was intoxicated, and after some time, quite literally so. He took me to a gin palace, and thereafter the room spun in a hazy muzzle of sweetness, cake, liquor, dancing, spinning, laughing, bubbling, sickness, darkness. I awoke the next morning in his bed. Lying beside me, he looked much older than he had the night before in the half light of the bar. Deep lines cracked around his eyes and mouth, and his thin lips twisted up into a cruel smile. He smelt of cigar smoke and onion soup, his hot, moist breath upon me like a slobbering Labrador. I cried silently, closing my eyes lest he woke, sickened and horrified with the knowledge that I had lost my innocence. How could I ever return home to my family after this? 1 hour later, he awoke. Without acknowledging my presence, he dressed and left the room, saying nothing. I would later discover a £5 note on his writing desk, addressed to Dearest Eliza, for services rendered. Men, I quickly learned, are abhorrent creatures, and I developed what might be deemed a pathological and instinctive horror of men and of love. And yet, there it was. £5. The things I could buy. If that night alone produced £5, imagine the possibilities. How much for 3 nights? 1 week? 1 year? And the rest must surely be easier, for the worst surely must be through. He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. Certain devotion in the hearts of men on one particular day may the very next afternoon be found rotting and festering in the bud. He loves me not.
That night, an handsome young man, perhaps distracted by a pretty dark-haired flower seller in a fetching blue dress, crashed his velocipede into a market stall, and Monsieur Fabrique played cards in Le Chateau Beauvoir. He drank absinthe, convinced that the elixir was an aide memoir. It was the 7th time he had lost that night.
10 years. When I caught a glimpse of my reflection in my gold pocket mirror, I thought how little I had changed. But Paris is much changed. The ardent strain of moralism infiltrating the streets, although really only the appearance of such a thing. It suffocates this place. Oh, yes. I'll be better off away from it all.
Soapy, acrid smells spilled out onto the streets as washerwomen emptied their slush buckets of dirty linen water and then refilled them for the night ahead.
I came to Paris much as I leave, having no real wealth of which to speak. But back then, my determinations sparked, sharply enlivening, inspiring. In short, I was adored. I had arrived.
I have something for you.
You shouldn't bring me gifts.
But I live to make you happy, to see your smile.
You spoil me.
It is my right to do so.
What a beautiful locket.
There. I told Sir Frederick I'd buy it after we'd been out hunting this morning. He had this rather wonderful new rifle. Actually, I'd like one, although of course it doesn't help his aim. Nearly shot the gamekeeper twice. Oh my. Suits you. May I kiss you?
No, I think not. Oh, these summers. Uncomfortably sticky.
I almost forgot. another present, and this even more special than the last.
What is it?
Flaubert, Madame Bovary, all the rage in the city, 100 pages.
Oh. How nice.
Each page marked with a 1,000 franc note.
Duval, extravagant indeed. You spoil me too much.
My pleasure.
And so it went on. Duval bought me anything my heart desired. Hats, dresses, petticoats, the finest silk lingerie. I'll take this and that, and those and these, and, oh, Venetian lace. Such a lovely shade of primrose. I simply must have it. Oh, and of course this to match. And those, and this, and these.
You'll be the envy of Paris, my darling. May I kiss you now?
The ethical qualms of a transactional relationship never held much water from my perspective. For what, I might ask you, is the difference between a man and a wife that doesn't exist between a courtesan and her lover? The same petty jealousies, trust, understandings, misunderstandings, and love, whatever that is.
Something wrong, darling.
Oh, it's this heat. When did Paris become so unseasonably warm?
My sensitive lamb. You really are most affected by the changing weather. I shall call for a servant.
No, I'll fetch Melanie. Yes, I fear I would be quite terrible company this evening. I'm afraid I must retire.
Of course. We can't have you ill for Offenbach's La Vie Parisienne.
Absolutely not.
My dear?
Yes.
Earlier this morning, I'd been out for a walk and I composed a sonnet dedicated to your beauty. Do you wish to hear it?
How very sweet and quite unnecessary. Let's save that until I'm feeling well enough to focus. Then I might give it my full attention.
Bah. Yes, excellent thought. One moment, my love.
Whatever is it?
Oh, nothing. I just wanted to hear your voice.
I see. Very well.
A pretty sight, you curling your hair like a mermaid on the rocks.
Did you knock before entering my bedchamber?
I'm afraid the thought didn't occur to me. I do beg your forgiveness. Should I go out and come back in again?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Will this take long? Only fairly busy, as you can see.
It pains me to have to ask. In fact, I'm sorry to repeat coarse gossip, but...
Well, do say.
It's just that I'm sure it's... Well, you see, there are some people saying, no, I shouldn't entertain such malicious nonsense.
What do they say? Which people?
There was a party, the Duke's birthday. I believe you were in attendance.
Indeed. Such a merry time. Oh, my, the music, the dancing.
Yes. My dear, do you recall what you were wearing that night?
My lilac chiffon gown.
I see.
Good.
No, wait, you see, there's a rumor that...
There were always rumors. poor, innocent Duval. He had no idea. I remembered the party well. And at one point, I was indeed wearing the lilac dress. But as the evening rolled on, I decided to lighten the mood. I undressed in the kitchen and instructed three servants to lay me on a silver platter to be presented stark naked to the Duke's dinner guests. They carried me into the dining room. Now, cut into the main dish, I ordered the dinner guests. Poor Lady Marian went quite white. And alas, she had to leave the party shortly afterwards. But that aside, oh, it was a riot.
Forgive me, but I saw what you should know.
Vicious. People will say anything. They simply love to slur my reputation.
Oh, well, of course, I never doubted you.
I should hope not. Mortified.
Let's never speak of it again. You know, I wonder if it's because we aren't fulfilling our physical relationship, as it were. I'm absolutely sure of our
emotional connection? Those strong bonds which tie us together.
Yes, but a man sometimes needs...
Wonderful. I feel it too. A keen emotional connection. Hearts entwined.
Yes, my darling.
I was unwavering in my feelings for Hanson Duval, who, despite having all the advantages of a wealthy young Parisian, I must admit, could never really do it for me. And of course, faced with the prospect of a rejection, a man in the heat of arrogance smarts. Unlike a woman whose pain turns inwards on and against herself, a young man seeks out a culprit upon whom to avenge his wounded pride. Hello? Who's there? Thank goodness, Duval. I feared you were an intruder.
There comes a time, Cora, when a man must...
What are you doing?
I didn't want you to come to this, but you pushed and you pushed, and there is such a thing as masculine pride. I'm sorry.
Oh, God! What are you... No!
What have you done to me?
Poor thing. Must have hurt. A lady would never be seen about town in a blood-stained petticoat. But seeing as it is Venetian lace, and rarely to be seen in this particular shade, I turned it inside out and carried on.